are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Good day, good evening, whenever you are listening, wherever you are listening. Welcome back into the best metal podcast from the worst metal town, the Fundamentalists. I'm your host, Dual Guess, and rounding out our triumvirate of twatage here, we got Peter Bog.
Good evening.
And Richard Donahue.
What's up?
We're going to have reviews for the latest Asphyx album, Necroceros, What a Time to Be Alive by Werewolves, and Where the Gloom Becomes Sound by Tribulation. And we'll also be discussing some recent heavy metal happenings in the news. All this and more on today's episode. So in the build up to us recording this particular pod, I was combing around for news, and there's a series that Metal Injection does where they collect all of the streaming data for Spotify, and they compile it every month in a nice handy list as far as all the hard rock and heavy metal bands and how they're doing. And there was some surprising finds this month for January 2021. And so I wanted to just ask some quick questions of y'all just to see if you could properly guess where some of these bands might fall on the list and who's currently a little bit more popular. Care to take a guess on who's the top band, rock or metal in the world, streaming on Spotify right now?
I feel like you're setting us up here, Joel. I'm afraid to answer.
There's a lot of traditional names on this list.
That makes me fearful that it's the Black Album. It's not Metallica, is it?
It's Queen.
Okay.
Oh. Actually, Metallica is not found until number 7. Some of the
top 10, I mean.
Yeah, this might make you cringe, but AC/DC, Linkin Park, Guns N' Roses, Bon Jovi, and Nirvana all slot in ahead of Metallica.
In fact, State Rock.
Yeah, indeed. After Metallica, the next metal band you'll find is System of a Down at 13, Van Halen at 14, Scorpions at 15. Somewhat surprisingly, Bring Me the Horizon is in the top 20 at 17, coming in ahead of Radio Rock Gods, Papa Roach, and Disturbed. I can barely say that with a straight face. Black Sabbath comes in at 20. The list kind of goes on and on. Where do you think Pantera would show up on the list? And of these three, Motorhead, Pantera, and Megadeth, who do you think's the highest?
I think Motorhead's the highest, although I think that they probably, I think Pantera and Motorhead are probably somewhere in 40-50, and I think Megadeth is probably below that.
What about you, Richard?
I would say probably Pantera. I would say probably in the 40s, Motorhead in the 50s, Megadeth, I'd say in the 40s.
Right-ish. Motorhead is the top billed band, coming in at 52, Peter. However, Pantera slots in at 58 and Megadeth at 61.
All
so
right.
Relatively close there in the ballpark. Is Rob Zombie above or below Motorhead?
Above, definitely.
Richard?
Yeah.
Above?
Yeah, I would say above. For
below,
sure.
65. Is Judas Priest above or below Motorhead?
I was going to say Rob Zombie's stock is really starting to diminish.
Apparently.
I know that Lemmy's dead. I mean, maybe Rob needs to pull the Michael Jackson and fake his own death and go, you know, live in Fiji and let his brand start to get a renaissance.
Speaking of a fading star, where do you think Tool comes in on this list?
Wow, I have no idea. This 70s. That one's hard. It's like there's part of me that you already read off the top 10. I would guess they were in top 10.
Hilariously,
70s because their stock is not what it used to be. Even their last album, Fear Inoculum, a lot of people did not like. I didn't even give it a listen, to be honest.
Not quite 70, Richard, but hilariously 69.
<Da-dun-dun>.
With 2,683,849 listeners.
Because I remember it took forever for Tool and Spotify. Like, they held out till, like, I think about last year, middle last year, they finally let their stuff be on Spotify.
Yeah.
So not bad, actually, for that limited time being on the platform.
Well, you said it's a monthly figure, though, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Like Children of Bodom has a 53.31% increase this month, obviously because of the death of Alexi Laiho over last month. Who do you think comes in higher, Slayer or Dio?
I'm going to Slayer.
I think I'm going to go Dio.
It is Dio, but not by much. Dio comes in at 77 and Slayer at 82.
Wow. Who do you Slayer at 82. Yikes. Yeah.
Who do you think is higher, Lamb of God or Trivium?
Lamb of God.
Lamb of God.
Wrong. It is Trivium. Damn. Trivium is at 90. Lamb of God is at 95. Who do you think is higher, Ghost or Hailstorm?
Hailstorm.
I'm going to go Ghost. I think Ghost's higher.
It's Hailstorm.
Okay.
Who do you think is higher, Dragon Force or Danzig?
Dragon Force still a thing?
This is a hilarious comparison duel. But I'm giving you the golf clap over here for this one.
Danzig.
Just because you would never assume that Dragon Force has more listeners in a month than Danzig, but they do, at least in this month.
You know what I want to see is Herman Lee start a side project fronted by Danzig and just see what the hell that would be like.
I would fucking listen to it.
Bluesy electro shred.
Where do you think we find Behemoth?
90s, I'd say. Mid-90s. Is it out of 100?
Where do you find Behemoth?
All this? Or what's the cap? What's the highest?
I was going to say, I don't think they're in the top 100. Do they even make the list?
They're 211.
Yeah.
Okay, which I could have sworn that they would be, you know, even higher than that. Bands like Death Clock, Demon Hunter, Heaven Shall Burn, Suicide Silence, Thy Art Is Murder. Hell, even those Bay Area underground losers, Exodus, are ranked higher than Behemoth. It's kind of crazy. How many monthly listeners do you think Exodus has? Ballpark, Peter.
I'm not really sure what the figures are, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't know how to gauge that because I've never seen these numbers.
From
before.
The very top, Queen this month had 33,585,342, and they were the top billed band. The 100th ranked band has 1,427,000.
Bet you it's a cliff after that, though. So if you said Exodus is what position?
Let me find them again. Exodus is at 181.
I'm going to guess that they have like 270,000.
A little bit higher, lowballed 482,752.
Alrighty.
Don't want to waste too much time with many more of these, but there are some fun comparisons here. Who do you think comes in higher, At the Gates or Carcass?
At the Gates. I think At the Gates is higher.
I might go Carcass, actually.
It is Carcass.
Hmm.
But are they higher than Burzum or Butzum?
But no.
I have no idea how to gauge that one.
Carcass is indeed higher than the both of them. Shockingly, Baroness is all the way down at 270, only with 176,081 streams. I say only, but...
I mean, that's still a lot, but I from what I heard, their last record wasn't really... didn't take that well. That's at least what I heard.
It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it, but... I think that we slotted them under Curse of Consistency. They haven't really done anything innovative since Yellow and Green, you know.
I thought Green was kind of underrated. It wasn't quite as good as Yellow, but there's still some really great tracks on Green.
Who's higher, Emperor or Deaf Heaven?
Emperor.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Emperor, too.
It's Deaf Heaven by one spot.
Wow.
Deaf Heaven is 326, Emperor is 327.
Do you think that pisses Eason off?
Maybe.
He's too busy with this proggy solo project to care. By the way, I wonder, you know, Queen got all these views, so does Brian May and the drummer get a check? Like a couple penny? Like 27 cents, there you go.
Pretty sure most of these streams came from us last month, but what do you think, how many streams do you think Death has?
Yeah. Based on that setup, I'm going to say that they were less than Exodus.
Yes, Death is all the way down at 337 with 91,037. Revocation, even lower than that, with only 63,000. Again, I keep saying only. I would love to have these sort of numbers.
That's all. Just 60,000. Pshaw, sir. Pshaw.
Pshaw, indeed. But that's enough of that. You can check out this list on metalinjection.net. They publish these numbers every month. And like this month, I'm sure there'll be more fun to have in the future.
Yes.
Something else that's going to be coming out in the future that is going to be a load of fun is the brand new Cannibal Corpse record, Inhumane Harvest. They released their first single from it. And I find it funny because the reaction is either, fuck yeah, more Cannibal Corpse, the legends return, or... I haven't been listening to Cannibal Corpse in 15 to 20 years because they're still just Cannibal Corpse, and there's really not a whole lot of gray area in between. I happen to be a really big fan of this track, though. It's super groovy, super chunky, and it reminds me of the best parts of Kill and Evisceration Plague, the last two Cannibal Corpse records that I actually really enjoyed. The best parts of those put together. This is also the coming out party for Eric Rutan as a permanent member of Cannibal Corpse. Gentlemen, did you get a chance to listen to this Inhumane Harvest single, and what did you think of it?
I did get into it, and I liked it, although I did the Dastardly Deed that you just described, and I said, yep, that's a Cannibal Corpse track.
Well, I mean, that's, to be fair, it is pretty easily identified as a Cannibal Corpse track right off the bat. Right off the bat, which... maybe you can knock them for, but hey, when you've been in the game this long, if you don't have an identifiable sound, well, that's on you, right?
Yeah. I like the album artwork that they released for the record. I think you said the record's going to be called Inhuman Harvest, but I think it's actually Violence Unimagined is going to be the name of the record. Is that right?
Oh, did I mention say Inhumane Harvest is both the album and the single? That, my bad, yeah.
Anyways, that's what I thought, because I'm looking at the copy of the album art here, but what's that character from... Mortal Kombat that has like the gnarly teeth,
the chick,
Melina.
I don't know her name, but I know you're talking about. Name is
Melina. Yeah, that's immediately what I thought of. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got a kind of old school looking album art. Reminds me a little bit of the Wretched Spawn too. Something between the Wretched Spawn and something even earlier from like the 90s. What about you, Richard? What were your thoughts on this?
I enjoyed it a lot. I was kind of in the camp that you stated earlier where, it's Cannibal Corpse, blah, blah, blah. But it surprised me. Like, it is, them riffs be chunky. I mean, big fucking chungus here. Like, Jesus Christ. And the grooves were very interesting and a lot more intricate than in the past. Definitely Rutan and something that. So I could say for the first time in probably... 10 years or so, I'm actually stoked to hear a new Cannibal Corpse record. So very interested to hear some more singles off this record, especially knowing that Rutan actually wrote 3 full songs on his own as well. So it makes you wonder if maybe this was one of the tracks that he wrote by himself.
It's very possible. I also looked for that songwriting who it was credited to, but I couldn't find any information as far as specific band members. Single. Anyway, Violence Reimagined will be coming out later on this year. Keep your eyes peeled for that. If this new single is any indication, every metalhead in the world will let you know when it's out. So it's not like you really have to worry about it. Rest assured, though, we will be covering it with a review. King Diamond himself has announced not only a new King Diamond album, which he says he already has the title for. It's called The Institution. But there's also a new Merciful Fate album that he's going to be releasing as well. He says he's not going to give us the title yet, though, but can confirm that the album artwork has been completed. Not a whole lot of details on the music. That is obviously an afterthought to the artwork here.
I feel like he probably was in a gallery and just bought something and was like, you know what? That would make a good Merciful Fate album cover. And now he's like, fuck, I got to write this thing.
Shit.
He does go on to say that the Merciful Fate record is very old-fashioned, is what this quote says. It says, Hank is writing very much like the old days, and it's nice to feel that we can capture that again. So that's 2 albums that are being worked on. By the time we can go out and tour again, I am sure. The Hank he's referring to is obviously Hank Sherman. Moving on, possibly the biggest story in heavy metal is the recent allegations against shock rocker Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson has been accused of emotional and physical abuse by a few women in the past, but it is the latest allegation that seems to have really put the nail in the singer's coffin. Using a term that I just became familiar with because of this story, signal boosting, I guess when one person lends credence to previous allegations by either confirming it with eyewitness testimony or their own story because they are a more higher profile victim, so to speak. I don't know. I didn't know anything about it until this week.
That's a little twee for something about like, abuse allegations, I have to say.
I have noticed it in so many stories mentioning that exact term, signal boosting.
I mean, that's the way that the internet works now. Somebody says something cute and trendy, and all of a sudden everybody catches onto it. There's like literally fire. A psychological phenomena for this. It's not the Bader-Meinhof syndrome, right? That's the one where you're so dumb that you think you're smart. That's the one that everybody said Trump had. It's I can't remember what it is.
Dunning-Kruger?
Is that the one? It's where you become aware of something, and all of a sudden you see it everywhere. You know that, and I think language is one of the prime examples where you learn what a word is, or you hear a phrase, and then all of a sudden you notice it everywhere.
Yeah, mention this coming from Metal Injection. Marilyn Manson was accused by actress Evan Rachel Wood and five other women of abuse. Wood officially named Manson as her abuser on February 1st. As Wood made her announcement, she was signal boosting other women who were speaking of the abuse they alleged Manson caused to them. Since then, Wes Borland, who played with Marilyn Manson, corroborating everything Evan Rachel Wood said, claiming it was true. Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails said there's a reason he cut ties with Marilyn Manson 25 years ago, saying he is not a good person. Gentlemen, are you surprised by this at all?
Hey, I just want to go back and correct the record. I was actually correct that it is Bader-Meinhof, and then Dunning-Kruger was the one where I said that you have low-level cognizance and you think that you're a lot better at everything than you actually are. So had them flip-flopped there.
Am I really shocked? Assume this is true? Not really, honestly. It seems something to be expected.
Something to be expected. That's almost my first reaction. I mean, you can't spend your entire career attempting to be extreme and a shock rocker and then expect people to be surprised, like, say it ain't so, Brian. Say it ain't so. We all know it probably is so. He's been dropped by his record label. His previous producer has cut ties with him.
He was supposed to be on the show American Gods. That dropped him.
Yeah, two TV shows dropped him.
That got dropped. His label, I mean, his manager of over 25 years dropped him. But my thing is, you know, you mentioned what Wes Borland said, and I was aware of the Trent Reznor, you know, cutting ties with them years ago. But like, if all this is true, then why don't these people speak up then or say anything? Or the manager get rid of him years ago? Like, was it convenient? But now that it's in the news, oh, time to jump ship. Seems kind of
Richard, I just heard
part.
A cash register ring in the background. I think that's our reason, right?
Oh, of course. But I think it's just shitty on their part if that's the case. So,
have any takes on this, Peter?
No. I don't. I'm not familiar enough with him or his career personally. I mean, I'm thinking back and I remember watching him inside of a Bowling for Columbine, and he seemed fairly eloquent and level-headed, but apparently that's not the truth, or, you know, some people are leading the media to believe it. So, I mean, who the fuck knows? I don't know these people. I don't even know if I really care.
Moving on. Cradle of Filth have announced the title of their latest attack on all of our senses of decency.
Wink, wink, Dan.
Existence is futile. Very, very apt.
It's like he almost wanted to say resistance is futile. Maybe he's hoping people will confuse it for the well-known Borg entry speech that they transmit to all vessels that they're going to attempt to assimilate. But he was just a little bit off there.
Richard, I mean, are you excited for the new Cradle of Filth? Existence is futile. They're 13th. You know it's going to be special.
It's going to be real special.
I'm glad they didn't call it 13. Or maybe I'm disappointed that they didn't. I thought that pretty much every band was like required to do that.
6 Feet Under already had an album called 13. It was fucking terrible.
Danny Filth might be shocking, has described
on the record being bad, but
Danny Filth really has described this as a monumental project, the best album of current years, if not of all time. It's an absolutely killer of an album, if you forgive my self-flattery, with an immense production, courtesy of Scott Adkins and Grindstone Studios once again.
And Dystopia was Megadeth's best record, so.
Fast and slow parts, and faster still. New delectable flavors, and those reminiscent of earlier Cradle of Filth albums galore. Massive choruses and melancholic drop-downs. Old school melodic new wave of British heavy metal.
Oh,
amid furious scathing black metal and apocalyptic groove. And we as a band can't wait for everyone to hear it.
Dictated but
Danny's
not read.
Plugs by now.
Love Danny.
I wonder if he got hair plugs and, you know, he's still doing work at the high platform shoes and stuff to, you know, mask his shortness. So, yeah. I think at this point, it's easy to say that Cradle of Filth is about as relevant as a fucking Walkman.
That being said, He goes on, this stunning new album is everything you can expect from the many shades of black that go to discover a Cradle of Filth release, and far, far worse.
If by black you mean a fucking Hot Topic average customer, then yes, that would be black.
I'm not even sure that's true anymore. That was like...
No, not anymore, but it used to be.
Who is your average Hot Topic customer these
days? Doesn't Hot Topic sell like Tyler the Creator and Cardi B t-shirts now?
Yeah, definitely. It's like 90% superhero logos. And they got some, we mentioned them twice on the show now, but Bring Me the Horizon, you know, is all up in that.
Okay.
Hot Topic, probably Ghost Main 2005.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's been a long time since I've been in one, a mall, and two, seen a Hot Topic. But I remember the last time I saw it, it was much more brightly lit than it was when I was growing up.
Also, I feel that Spencer's kind of gave them the run for their money, too, kind of doing the same thing, but a more diverse version. So Hot Topic had to follow suit to keep up with the competition.
Do y'all remember Gadzooks?
Nope.
No.
Nope. Okay. Moving on then. I think that's going to about do it for news. Let's move on into what is traditionally what we kick off with.
Are we going to talk about John Schaefer or no?
Are we not talking about John Schaefer?
Richard, tell us about your boy.
My boy John. My boy's John's a bit of trouble here. Give me a moment here. I have some stuff from the Republic, which I would say local Indiana newspaper. He's from, according to a reporter there, Jordan Murray. He's being held in the Marion County Jail as of Friday, February 5th, 2 weeks after the U.S. Magistrate for the Southern District of Indiana, Judge Mark Dinsmore, signed an order for the Iced Earth guitarist to appear in D.C.'s district court. He's facing up to 6 federal criminal charges after he's accused of spraying a police officer with pepper-based bear repellent during the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol.
Armed with bear spray.
He has waived his preliminary hearings as well as his rights to identify. Correction. Has waived his identity hearing in production of a warrant 2 weeks ago in the U.S. District Court of the Southern District of Indiana. See, he'll be soon transported by U.S. Marshal to D.C., where the government lawyers and Schaefer's legal team will mutually agree to handle the proceedings. And he essentially has to prove that he is not a threat to himself or the public before he's released on bail. So hopefully they don't throw the book at him too hard. And musically, business-wise, Iced Earth is done. I mean, they've been done since really the first Ripper album.
Yeah, I was going to say since the Ripper years.
And his bandmate in Demons and Wizards left as well. Things aren't going well for Mr. John Schaefer. It's kind of funny to me that a man who, according to news reports, hadn't voted in 12 years was at the Capitol spraying people with bear spray over a quote-unquote stolen election that he didn't even participate in. Seems kind of weird, but you know, whatever.
So that's not sticking to your guns. Maybe he comes out of this and writes, maybe this will, if assuming he goes to prison and gets out, he'll have the inspiration to write a killer record. I don't know who the fuck will put it out, but hell, Inquisition got a record deal. So if a pedophile can, I guess anybody fucking can. So only time will tell. Moving on.
I suppose that is true.
Unless you have something to add.
No, I've got nothing else to say about that. What we've been listening to. Peter, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. All right. So this week I've really been enjoying Skid Row's first two records, the self-titled from 1989 and then also Slave to the Grind from 1991. It's definitely a little bit of a change of pace.
Great album.
Too much.
Albums.
Hair metal and the like, but I've always been a huge fan of particularly that first one. Like I said, came out in 1989, so they were a little late to the hair metal game. They were certainly riffing on well-treaded territory at that point, but there's some excellent tracks, in particular the last one, Midnight Slash Tornado, has always been a great track that I hope someone awesome will cover one day, because it's got high energy, it's got great riffing, and then, of course, all of their classics like Youth Gone Wild and 18 to Life are also off of that one, along some other ones like Rattlesnake Shake, and you know, it's just it's good
Big
dishwashing
guns.
Music, you know what I mean?
Favorite of mine.
And then Slave to the Grind, 1991, a couple of years later, it's definitely heavier, sort of more riff oriented,
yes.
But they're definitely moving into sort of the 90s alternative sound, and so for that reason, I don't prefer it, even though I think that on the whole, the songwriting seems to sort of take a step forward. But I kind of like what Sebastian Bach does more with his vocals on that one, because he's starting to do again just different things and sound a little bit more alternative. And so that actually, listening to that, had me go back and listen to Facelift from 1990 from Alice in Chains to get my feet wet into some 90s alternative. And that's a really metal record. I mean, even coming from Slave to the Grind and going back to that one, I forget sometimes how heavy that record is compared to how sort of dirgy and down-tempo Dirt evolves into, which itself is a fairly heavily distorted record. So anyways, after my 1990s listening, I decided to go back and sort of invest myself into spending time with Shamash's first two records, Sick Levo Lux from 2010 and Contradiction from 2014. And if I didn't love these guys before, pretty much everything they do is just masterful. In particular, off of that first record, they have a track called Chaos Reigns, which of course instantly, you know, made me think of how Dissection sort of owns the Reign Chaos, or Reign Chaos as some people say it, but it's definitely the standout track from that record in my opinion. And then from Contradiction, I also was a big fan of the track Golden Light and Until Our Poisons Devour Us. So if y'all don't love Shamash already, there's two more palatable entrees to go ahead and whet your palates, along with their Heart of No Lights, their most recent record from 2019, as well as 2017's Triangle, which I think is probably their magnum opus at this point in time. What have you guys been up to?
So for me, outside of what we are going to already talk about later on, because I had been listening to a ton of that Werewolves record, I also checked out the Live in London album from Zeal and Ardor. I think it made one of your, what you've been listening to here fairly recently as well. It reminded me to go back and check it out. When I was recording the beginnings of the guitars for the new Finsterness album, on the way over to the recording studio, my drummer and I, we listened to both New Bermuda and Sunbather from Death Heaven.
Pretty much
from start to finish. Fuck you, Richard. They're both fantastic records. And throughout the time, I just kept thinking to myself, how the fuck did Richard say this wasn't black metal? Do you want to go back and revisit that, Richard?
Especially Sunbather. The vocals on that one, when I revisited it, sound like so compressed and blown out like early black metal. I think that the reason I prefer New Bermuda is because it takes that element out more so and brings it into modern production. But yeah, I mean, it's black as shit.
Oh, I'll take you. Okay. Teach their own.
To each their own.
I did hear all of that. You know, you recognized all those emo sophomoric elements, though, that were in there, right? All that screamo... high school.
I mean, just because there's elements of something doesn't mean it's that. So
elements. Oh my god. Okay, moving on.
Matt Hafey. Still happily. God damn it.
To mark the 16th anniversary of Ascendancy, Matt Hafey has put out a 4-song acoustic cover of 4 tracks from Ascendancy.
That's interesting.
And has vowed to do it with every album. And I have to say, I am more than excited to get 4 acoustic versions of Shogun tracks. No matter which track he chooses, an acoustic version sounds
150%.
Incredible. Can you imagine I imagine he'll do Down from the Sky, maybe Into the Mouth of Hell We March. Can you imagine of Prometheus and the Crucifix?
It would be good.
Acoustic. It'd be filthy. I'd absolutely love it. Also, mandatory Ulta listening, mandatory Vampire listening, and that really about does it for me as far as what I have been listening to.
You know what? I went back and listened to Rex by Vampire. It wasn't this week, but the previous week, because I know that you ragged on me for not putting it on my top 2020. And it's amazing how how differently I felt about the tone of that record. Like, it's old school, but it's kind of like tinny. Like, it's a little thin. I don't know. But then again, I probably was listening to like Shamash right before that, and so, you know, comparisons sometimes can be kind of a bitch. So,
I mean, I think it's kind of supposed to sound that kind of old school tinny vibe.
Yeah.
Slayer from the 80s.
Yeah.
Richard, what about you?
I've been slumming around a lot in the past, listening to some Under the Knife alumni, particularly Typo Negative. Their World Coming Down album, particularly the song Who Will Save the Sane, is a song I've been enjoying a lot of that one. October's Rust. The track, especially in praise of Bacchus.
There is no record called Wolfman. October's Rust.
It's a habit. I said it for 10 fucking years. October
Habitually
Rust.
Wrong.
And finally, Slow, Deep, and Hard with the the first track, so probably a top five typo songs ever, unsuccessfully coping with the natural beauty of Infidelity, which apparently is actually three songs in between. Number one, Anorganic Transmutogenesis, Synthetic Division. Two, Coitus Interruptus. And three, I Know You're Fucking Someone Else. Very Peter Steele. I also listened to Death Individual Thought Pattern as well. I fucking love that record. Death's most technical record, and I would go so far as to say probably my favorite iteration of Chuck's vocals, because he's intelligible but incredibly angry, and comes across quite well through there throughout. And 16 have a new split album coming out. It's called a Doom Sessions 3. It's from this Italian label where they do a split with two bands, and 16 has two tracks on it, Tear It Down and Death on Repeat, and they're both really well. It's a natural progression of what they did off of their new album, their last album, which is on my top 10 list, and I can't think of the name right now. Dream Squasher, with the more melodic vocals. It is a bit of a change.
That's the one with Kissing Bobby the Altar Boy, vocals, correct.
And not Chris Giroux, but I think he's coming in the role quite well, so I'm very excited to hear the new one. And finally, about 2 weeks ago, Asphyx, the band we're going to talk about tonight, they did a live stream, free live stream from the Netherlands of the record release, the new album. And I've got to say, out of all the live streams I've seen so far, it's definitely my favorite. They played pretty much six songs off the new record, all the ones I wanted to hear, minus my least favorite track, a bunch of old school tracks, and they closed with The Rack and Last One on Earth, two of my favorite Asphyx songs of all time. So it was a fucking fantastic. And best of all, it was free. So that's what I've been up to this week.
Well, since you mentioned Asphyx and we are reviewing their new album, Necroceros, I feel like that serves as the perfect segue to move on into reviews, beginning with Necroceros by Asphyx. And since you are the Asphyx fanboy, you're the one who suggested we take a listen to this as a podcast and review it, Richard, why don't you take the lead? Tell us about this new album. What makes it so different from the others, if anything?
I gladly will duel. Well, this is the band's 10th album in their 34 years of existence. Then they're also their fourth since coming back from a long break in 2007 with Death the Brutal Way. And this record was surprisingly, especially as comparison to the last three of their comeback records, it was a lot more produced, actually, which is kind of a shocker, because a lot of the past they've been very old school, minimal, dirgy type production, but this one has more polish to it.
It suits
there's a lot
them.
Of yes. In this album. It's actually a lot of melodic sections too, especially in tracks, the middle section of 3 Years in Famine and the song In Blazing Oceans.
3 Years of Famine is one of the best songs on this record, for sure.
Yes. Which makes sense, because Van Drunen and Paul Bayens were both in Hail of Bullets. Rest in peace, Hail of Bullets, that being said. Van Drunen sounds fucking great. I mean, he's doing this shit for 30 years. He still sounds like a vicious, starved fucking animal in vocals, and definitely stands out to me as one of my favorite, probably my favorite death metal vocalist of all time, if I had to pick one, honestly. So.
Damn. Him?
Yes.
All right.
I mean, he's unique. You know, he's kept that power 30 years. You know, what can I say? Different strokes for different folks, as they say.
Very much so.
What are some of y'all's thoughts on the record? I'll add in more later.
I thought it had a nice variety. There's a decent mix of both the fast and the slow songs, although I find myself, not slow, I should say, the mid-tempo. I found the mid-tempo songs like Mount Skull to be my favorite. That's when the album, I thought, hit hardest, although they do speed fairly well, too. Like you mentioned, Richard, this one does sound a lot better than their previous records do production-wise, and it makes a huge difference to me in how much I enjoyed the record. I wasn't necessarily expecting to love it, given what I had heard from them before, but Overall, I have to say I'm a pretty big fan. I don't absolutely love it. It didn't blow me away, but there's a lot going on here enough to warrant a second and third listen, and you could still find things you hadn't heard previously. What about you, Bog?
I think that this is an album that revealed itself to me as I got into it more. Originally, when I went in, I was a little bit... I was starting to have the feeling like I was going to write it off as just some old school death metal. But I think the production lured me in, and I said that there's enough here, and I was able to kind of nest into some of the intricacies of the guitar riffing and chord progressions, which, you know, came off as you know, brutal and kind of mid-tempo at times. And then as when I cracked open the lyrics, I found out that there's actually phenomenal storytelling. Every single song has something really engaging and really interesting. It's pretty much all about very serious topics. There's a lot of history in here too. Richard, you named the two tracks that I wanted to call out immediately already, but that's 3 Years Famine, which was about the famine in China after the communist government took over from 58 to 62. And they say something like 15 million Chinese people died because the communist government didn't know how to fucking grow crops. And then In Blazing Oceans
was bad. Is
about, you know, I mean, when you read the lyrics, and I have some of them here, I it's going to take too long. So I just encourage everybody to go out and actually read them for yourself. But it's about like a tanker trying to go around the Cape of... what is it, Good Hope, down at around South Africa, and they get blown up by a submarine. It's about the sailors like jumping to their death in the ocean that's on fire with oil. Like, it's just such a vivid, it's so vivid. It's stunning to me, the portrait that it painted, and that's when I really started to get engaged, because when you had that behind it, even though the riffs themselves weren't necessarily, you know, blow you away, technical standouts, it suddenly became this big sort of anthemic, you know, movie score, essentially.
Anthemic's a really good word. Their track Yield or Die has that quality, yes. And that's about warring native tribes.
Correct. And I wanted to mention that one as well as the last track, the title track.
Necroceros.
Yeah, Necroceros. As being two interesting ones where I liked the storytelling, and I don't think that they were the standout musical tracks, but again, like, that part of it was engaging enough that I think it's worth listening to. Yield or Die is a very animalistic and realistic look at what it's like to be basically a native man. I mean, there was warring tribes. It starts when this person is young. It talks about their first kill, you know, and just what it's like to, you know, have to survive and live as basically, you know, primitive human and sort of, you know, some of the lust and bloodlust and things like that go along with it. And then the last one is pretty interesting because it's about essentially, like, I'll call it like a fifth dimensional being or something that is, you know, not of organic matter, that's warring with other beings, and then it gets suppressed and sucked through the black hole, and then it comes and like wreaks havoc on like the earth. Is basically like the end of it is that it, like, the earth gets destroyed as a result of it. So again, all of that being said, I think that really amplified all of that. And I don't have the frame of reference to say if all of that was always present in all of their catalog, but I think that those people who are going to do what I was tempted to do and write it off as old school death metal, you know, with like a little bit of some kind of like crust influence in there, are doing themselves a disservice.
There's some blackens in here too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not completely monodimensional, but it's maybe a little bit monodimensional. So
it's definitely death doom, but I think that I feel is there's enough death metal in there where it's not just pure doom metal, so it definitely makes it stand out. My only real bitch with the record, honestly, is the second track, Molten Black Earth. That main verse riff is fucking boring as shit. Like, it sounds like a newer Obituary riff, which is not a compliment at all. It's boring like Caius, but brutal. But and I do one thing I do want to commend,
which is two bands in one comment.
One thing I do want to commend about the production is the fact the bass is audible all throughout the album. That's what's a huge plus this record. Like, if you listen, you can hear the bass throughout every fucking song, which is so fucking rare nowadays.
I have one. I wanted to say, you know, in terms of, I guess, gripes with this record is I don't think that the album artwork is doing them any favors. I would have liked to have seen it.
I love that. I think the album artwork's great.
Yeah. See, I mean, to me, personally, again, in terms of trying to engage people and say that this is actually, you know, exploring serious issues, I think that, you know, the skulls with lots of little skulls nested in it. I mean, was it like a B-side from the same artist that did, you know, Morbid Angel's first record, you know, Altars of Madness,
I mean,
right?
All I have to do is look at their past few albums, even their old school shit. It's pretty much been the same guy the past couple, 20 years. So they have a theme they keep throughout. So, though, one comment I do want to make is since last year, Decibel put Incantation Sect of Vile Divinities at number 11 for top 100 best albums of the year. If that's the case, then
we all know
in 2021, their list, this should land at least 8 or 9, because this is a better record than that. Confirmed.
Did anyone else feel like the record was kind of long at times?
It's like 50 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like 50 minutes.
There are two songs over 7 minutes and one song over 6 minutes. And those are the songs that I felt, you know, started to get kind of plodding. That's one of my main gripes with the record anyway. Other than that, I don't really have a whole lot of negative say. Some songs are more interesting than others, but that's the case with the vast majority of records that come out. Gentlemen, your scores?
I'm giving this one a 2.7.
I will say there was a lot of death doom and stuff. It can be a bit plodding. So someone that's not versed in, I definitely understand that. I'm going to give it a 2.6.
I'm going to give it a 2.8.
Oh, wow. It was my choice. You actually scored higher than me.
So that means it gets an 8.1 from us here at the Fundamentalist. Solid score for Necroceros. Our first album review of 2021, Asphyx, Necroceros. Moving on, Peter, if you thought Asphyx was a little one note, what did you think of Werewolves' second album, What a Time to Be Alive? Now, this band was formed in 2019, released their first album, The Dead Are Screaming, in 2020, and now are already back with their sophomore release. So, hardworking fellas, to say the least.
They're Australian, is that correct?
They are.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, this is an onslaught, and it's pretty much the same beats per minute from all 36 minutes of the record. I mean, you put that thing on, and it's just basically a blast beat almost the entire time, and that's not hyperbolic. I mean, that's kind of what this thing sounds like. In some ways, I think it's its best and worst characteristic.
But there's also times when it does change. The thrashy mid-tempos, the anthemic sections, hit so much harder because they do serve as an almost breather for the onslaught, which is a good word, the pummeling that you're receiving at the hands of this three-piece. Talk about, you know, a lot of noise for just three people. They give me heavy Dying Fetus vibes, I thought, at times on this record. There's also a little bit of a Blackened tinge to some of their riffs as well, which I really, really enjoy. And their breakdowns are chunky and groovy. This band is so heavy, but also makes you want to bang your head. I'm a big, big fan of not only this band, but this record. Fantastic slab of death metal. And the lyrics, while maybe not intelligent as I previously thought, but definitely witty. And they'll definitely make you laugh at more than a few times.
Werewolves isn't an intellectual powerhouse? Well, I'll be shocked.
Richard, what did you think of this album?
At first, I didn't care for those kind of shit, to be honest. I gave it a second listen, though. It definitely has quite a bit of charm to it. Reading an interview, this is basically... this band consists of the drummer from Psychroptic, Dave Haley, and the main guy from that band, the Berserker, Matt Wilcox. So this is basically them just fucking around, and they basically wrote the first album in like a week, and then got a deal with Prosthetic Records, put it out, and now 2 years later they're putting this one out. And they're on a 3-record deal, so now they're on number 2 that just came out, and... here were their thoughts on the album. We were so sure that we had made something so dumb you'd grow knuckle hair just listening to it, said Sam. But everyone seemed to think the first album was a nuanced, complex work of sensitive genius. We've avenged ourselves
on
such slanders by seriously decreasing the intellect on What a Time to Be Alive. As the BPM goes up, the IQ goes down. There's a focused effort on jamming as much searing hatred into every track, which we believe is the current zeitgeist.
They succeed. There is a definite vibe to this record, and it's not nice.
I like this so much more after hearing that quote. Like, seriously. Like, I was about to talk mad shit, but it's like, if it's that intentional, then bro, you guys crushed this.
That's what changed my mind too. Like, I thought this was like some like jokey guar death clock shit, but actually kind of legit. But this was like, okay, so this was just them fucking around having fun. And the best part is, Mr. Wilcock already has 4 more albums written in the same vein. So there's a lot more of this shit coming down the pipe. I will say probably my favorite parts of the record are the Blackma element that's throughout, especially the last track on the album, which
I believe it's a plague.
They will pay with their own blood. It's probably my favorite overall, but Crushgasm, the opening track, I Don't Like You, and the lyrics are fucking stupid, but
I don't like you. I fucking
Sublime
hate you.
Wartime voyeurism.
Sublime wartime voyeurism is great. Also with a lyrical gem, my piss. My piss is radioactive. There's plenty to laugh at this record, but always with, you know, your upper lip and nose slightly turned up just because of how brutally heavy some of these sections are. When they slow it down to really groove and it's just those palm muted chord progressions, like on Unfathomably Fucked in particular. Also, Crushgasm. Big ups for their chorus, quite anthemic. And I think their use of samples here is actually pretty funny. They've got some good ones, including one from Bronson with Tom Hardy. If neither of you have seen it, you should definitely.
I know what it is. I've never seen it.
I haven't seen it in years. A great movie, though.
Yes. I'm a big fan of not only this band, but of this record. I would probably agree that maybe it's not meant to be intelligent, but there's definitely a wink and a nod, some tongue-in-cheek, some self-awareness here. And above all that, the absolute onslaught that you get from this record is what I'm a big fan of. Just from start to finish, grabs you by the throat, never lets go. 3.0.
Okay. And after your shit about my heathen thing, I thought the heathen one was fantastic. I've caught shit ever since then.
You should.
All right. That's cool. I will say this before I get my score. Another elements record I really liked is the incredibly chunky, thrashy breakdowns throughout. Yes. I thought it was a nice nice bridge between the heavy blasting insanity. And And my final score had a little lower, raised it 2.36.
Yeah, I'm going to also raise my score a little bit because I feel like they redeemed themselves with that quote, but I'm giving this a 2.4.
What a Time to Be Alive by Werewolves scores a 7.76 from us here at the Fundamentalist. The last review that we're going to be doing today comes to us from Tribulation, their latest release, Where the Gloom Becomes Sound, on Bog's list for greatest album title ever.
Yeah.
It's finally here. Apparently this record had been written and completed a long while ago, but because of coronavirus, its release was delayed. But now it's finally been released. It is the last record featuring Jonathan Helter?
Hulton, Swedish.
Yeah, Jonathan Holton. Gentlemen, what did you think about Where the Gloom Becomes Sound? Is it any better than their last release, which you infamously hated, Richard?
Me? Hate such a strong word. I just didn't think it was that great by comparison. The Horrors, The Formulas of Death, or Children on the Night, I felt it was an inferior album by comparison to those. But this one, I actually enjoyed a lot. I could say it brought me back to the fold, which is kind of a bummer, because now the main fucking songwriter of the band's leaving. It's like, well, shit. The atmosphere, to say, is fantastic. Like, it's throughout this album. I actually say it's one of my favorite parts of the record, as well as the great guitar playing between soloing between Hulton and Czar, the other guitarist.
Yeah, the guitar interplay is really good, especially the leads, like these trade-off solos.
Yes, the lead. That's what I'm bringing up. Very, very old school metal style. Actually reminded me a lot of that last In Solitude record before that awesome band broke up.
Getting a little vague here, Richard.
Yeah, anyways, the last In Solitude record's great, check it out. Felt a bit samey at times, and overall
it's just establishing a consistent character.
That's a good way of putting it, and I felt that it translated better on this record than on Down Below. I will put it that way.
What about you, Pete? What are your initial thoughts?
So when I first heard this, and I also saw that the word Jin was referenced on this one as well, and also had some pretty strong Judas Priest era arena rock vibes cooked into that guitar tone, I you know, sort of had an idea a little bit about what to expect. And I want to say that I think this record sounds fucking great. I was very impressed by just the production. And I read a little quote, and they said that they went to a different studio because they wanted to set up the drums and not break them down until the record was recorded. And I thought that was kind of interesting. It shows a little bit about their process, that they were, you know, probably not working in big swaths of recording sections and then just cutting things up. And so, I mean, you know, that was sort of curious. And, you know, it's hard to know if maybe that was, you know, precipitated, you know, the main songwriter leaving. Who the fuck knows? I know that they recorded this record at the same time as he doing his own solo release, which I haven't listened to.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to check it out after this, read this for sure.
That being said, though, and while, like I said, I love the way that it sounds, I totally agree with you guys that the interplay of the guitar is phenomenal. I just think that this is kind of a light album. Like, it's just the riffs don't hit because it's so atmospheric. And to me, it's verging so far into like goth and shoegaze atmosphere that it's like, is this I asked myself, I said, is this even a metal record anymore? And I think that that's frankly
it's gothic Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great way to describe it, you know, gothic. And like, I mean, yeah, that sounds actually, awesome. Yeah. But when I look back at where Tribulation was, where I could say like they were still, you know, had one foot firmly kind of in death metal, you know, and they were definitely incorporating a lot of other things. I think this might have been the moment where they decided to just sort of throw the whole thing out the window. And I don't know if they want to be anymore. And so that makes me kind of sad, is that they could be another band that is frankly trying to leave the genre or has lost interest in it in some way. And I think that
well, maybe Mr. Jonathan did, but he's left the band, and so I think actually a stylistic change is probably going to be in the cards for them with a new member and a new lead songwriter, or a more collaborative songwriting process.
Joseph Thal is the new guy who used to be Enforcer. So Enforcer, kick-ass metal band. So my hopes are, honestly, especially with the follow-up to this, I feel that's to really be the make-or-break album. Like, can they evolve beyond Jonathan being in the band? But in my opinion, this would be a good opportunity for them to kind of revisit that aggression from the horrors, from the formulas of death, but with the more nuanced, gothy approach of the Children of Night forward, and kind of coalesce that into something that's uniquely Tribulation that can be the best of both worlds.
You mentioned it had big atmosphere bog. Is it truly the gloom becomes sound?
Did you all think that this was kind of a hokey album title? Like, this shit is corny. Like, it's just,
I didn't hate it as much as you both did.
It's clunky. It's very clunky for sure. There's no denying that at all.
It's one of the worst album titles I've heard in a long time. Like, I'm going to say, like, it's just, it's like, I fully facepalmed. I was like, oh God. Like, but
no,
I mean, Duel, you defended it by saying,
album title.
Who focus grouped this?
Duel, you defended it by saying it's apt. And now that I've heard the album, I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's about right. I think that if you feel
Nailed
any
it.
Kind of way about the title, you're going to feel some kind of way about this record as well. So,
well, it's time to quantify how we felt numerically for this. Do you have anything else before we do that, though, Richard?
I do want to call out a couple of standout tracks. So,
me too, actually.
The last track, The Wilderness, to me was one of my definite favorites. I sort of referenced it earlier, but Daughter of Jin, I thought, was probably one of the most metal tracks. And then also Hour of the Wolf, I was very much impressed by.
I thought The Wolf's a bit generic, honestly. That was a good single.
Thanks, Richard.
But that's my least favorite on the record overall.
I also enjoyed Hour of the Wolf, Fuck You, Richard, as well as the opening track In Remembrance as well.
Me, that's one of my favorites as well.
And Funeral Pyre,
the
penultimate track on
Funeral
the record.
Yeah, Funeral Pyre is another favorite of mine. And I did feel that the song before that, Lethe, however you want to pronounce it, I felt they were a companion song. So they're very, very sorrowful piano playing goes straight into the rockiness of Daughter of the Djinn. I thought they meld really well. So I honestly see those as one song, personally.
The band disagrees.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I see it this way.
Well, they can go fuck themselves, because I'm interpreting their art in my way, and I think they're one song.
You're entitled to your opinions, but not to your own facts.
I do agree that In Remembrance and Funeral Pyre, my other favorite tracks off this record. And I'm very interested to hear the follow-up of this record, to see where they're going to take it. Continue down this gothy, shoegazy goth way, or to a more aggressive, full on aggressive old school metal. Maybe bring some of that brutalness from the horror back, or Formless of Death.
We could only be so lucky, sirs. I'm giving this album a 2.65. What about you, Bog?
I'm giving this album a 2.5.
What about you, Richard?
I echo Mr. Bog's
Tribulations,
sentiment,
where the gloom becomes sound, scores a 7.65. That makes it the lowest scoring album of our first review batch of 2021. If you agree or disagree with any of our reviews, be sure to let us know on our Instagram or our Facebook page. Make it fun for us to interact with you. Gentlemen, is there anything else been pressing on your minds recently? Anything else you want to talk about before we disappear into the dark again? Tough crowd. Tough crowd.
Not particularly.
I guess that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Fundamentalist Podcast. I am Dual Guess.
I'm Peter Bogg.
I'm Cletus Dick Donahue.
And we'll talk to you next time.